So let's start at the beginning here with Will. So Will, where did you first meet Jamal? What were the circumstances?
In 2009, we were moving offices right next door, and we needed some extra help just to pack up boxes, move boxes, and unpack them. And I reached out to somebody named Anthony Billicamp, and I knew him socially and asked him if he knew anybody that was available for a week's worth of work, you know, probably 40 plus hours. And he referred me to three guys, and one of those guys was Jamal. And Jamal showed up to help move. He showed up early, stayed late. He had incredible enthusiasm, was easy to work with, great to get along with. He worked primarily with our tech team that was in charge of the move, our IT team. And at the end of the week, the IT team came to me and said, you know, we love Jamal. He's incredible. We want him to join our IT team and have and become kind of a member of the tech staff at WH Trading. And I'm like, okay, great. What's he know about computers? And they said, nothing. And I'm like, okay, well, that can be taught. And so we offered Jamal a job. We asked Jamal to take some classes so that he could learn systems administration online. And each time he got a certain certificate, passed a class, he got a raise, and he slowly just worked his way as to a great member of the IT team. Is that about how you remember it, Jamal?
Yeah, that's exactly how I remember it. I remember being a fish out of water, obviously, in a trading firm and not knowing anything about IT. Because when they asked me first, they said, hey, do you know anything about networking? I thought they meant Facebook networking. Like, you mean talking to people? It's like, no, like Cisco, like IT. Like I knew very little about computers. And so I just remember, and also the culture shock, because the majority of people in the IT department are from Japan or from China. And I couldn't understand what they were saying. So it was like, when they were talking to me, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, and so, yeah, I just remember being I knew it was a big opportunity, and every day it felt like basketball practice, because I was ready to step up to the plate. I mean, every day I felt like I had to be sharp. It was great for me.
So Jamal, what had you done previous to this opportunity?
Yeah, I was standing downtown selling my self-published books. So I graduated college, you know, I had my bachelor's degree in communications, and, you know, I wanted to be an activist like what I am today. And so I was giving speeches at my local library about the Red Line closing down or charter schools coming into the area. And, you know, and I was standing downtown selling my books. And so this was right on time when Will had an opportunity, because it was getting cold outside. And you know, when it's cold outside, you don't want to be out there all day selling books. And so, but that's what I was doing, selling self-published motivational books downtown Chicago in front of Foot Locker.
So how did you like the courses and learning about computers and all of that? And what did that open up for you?
Yeah. So first of all, it was a blessing, because, you know, the courses were expensive, but it was a MicroTrain downtown Chicago. So I got to go there physically and learn online. Basically, I had a master's degree in internet marketing, but that had nothing to do with Microsoft administration. So it was really tough, man. It was big booklets and a lot of studying, a lot of flashcards. And the test, I remember you needed fingerprints for the test. You needed to come there early. It was recorded, you know, and I took it three times. And so the first time, you know, I bombed it because I never taken, you know, I didn't know what to do. The second time that I took it, I got within 5 points. And then the third time I took it, I actually passed. But every time that I took it, I came to talk to the people in the IT department or Will. And I was like, hey, you know, this is what I was very embarrassed. I don't like losing at anything. So I was ashamed. But they kind of knew, you know, I was over my head. So they were just like, you know, what could you do better? And I was like, man, I could spend an hour in the middle of the morning talking to you guys about my test or my issue, and they would locate Jamal. So every time I come in the morning, they quiz me with like, what is this? What is that? And then they show me hands-on the inside of the operating system so I could learn from actually doing it. And the second time I took it and I got within 5 points, oh, I was very embarrassed, but they didn't even take it that way. They were just like, what could you do better? You know, like, I was like, well, I can get flashcards this time and I'm really close. And then when I passed, you know, they act like it wasn't even a big deal. When I passed, it was just, I was like, look, I passed. They was like, man, get to work. You need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. But no, I felt like the whole job was, they celebrated me, like the whole, not even just the IT department, every department when I passed, they made me feel really special. And I just, that's what I remember about that time of my life. So.
That's great. Yeah. So then when did you start to come up with the idea for your organization and how did that develop?
Yeah, that developed because kind of out of nowhere, Will was volunteering at a place called UCAN, and he invited me to come with him one day. And, you know, he's the CEO of the company. So I was very nervous and I was just like, he's about to take off from trading to go volunteer. I was like, okay, well, I'll go with him. So, and I went, and my life changed because the kids that we were volunteering with reminded me they had been through a lot of the things that I've been through. And they had, I was like, oh, I remember when I used to think like you. You know, I remember when I hadn't traveled anywhere before college. I remember when I made a lot of excuses. I remember when I didn't dream bigger than my block. And particularly this day, we were helping kids do mock interviews. And so Will would interview them. He would ask me to ask them questions. They'd be really nervous, but I fell in love with the just giving back and helping people. I wouldn't even say giving back. I felt like I was walking in my purpose by just being in the room with them. Like, oh man, like my purpose is to like lift you up. And so basically I kept on doing that kind of work with Will, volunteering with Will, and I developed some ideas about the kids that we were working with had never really been to the trading firm. Like nobody I knew had been to a trading firm or nobody I knew had been downtown really. So yeah, I just started volunteering at Cook County Jail more. And the more and more I volunteered at the jail, the more and more I talked to kids who had never been downtown. We'd look out the window of the jail and you'd see the Sears Tower, you'd see the Hancock Building, you'd see the Cranes Communication Building, you see the Chase Building, and we'd all look out this one window of the jail and nobody had ever been there. So I developed an idea where I was like, you know, I'm going to take kids when they get out of jail back to the trading firm, to the WH Trading, because those are all my friends. I've been there for years and I'm going to show the kids like me how to build operating systems. But I couldn't get them out the jail, obviously. So I would go back to the neighborhoods like Inglewood and North Lawndale and Roseland and all over. And I'd bring the students when they were seniors, I'd bring them to the trading firm to build operating systems. And then we go eat at Giordano's across the street. And so everybody at the firm was cool with me doing that. I did it a couple times and I was like, you know what? I want to do this on a larger scale. And that's when I started picking everybody's brain at the trading firm about how I could do it. And I just, Steve Moffitt, Will, anybody, Wayne, anybody that I could talk to about this is what I want to do. I just talked to them about my plan until it became a reality. And that's kind of how I started the Explorers program.
So Will, what was your reaction to Jamal's efforts at this point as he was thinking about this?
I was ecstatic. I mean, Jamal and I went and volunteered at UCAN together, and I was like, I'm passionate about volunteering and, you know, trying to support kids, especially kids that, you know, might not have exposure to all the advantages that other kids have. And Jamal and I were doing that together, and to see him become passionate about that was really warmed my heart. I was thrilled to see it. And then to see him come up with the idea of My Block, My Hood, My City, and to sort of to watch him where it started out as just an idea and a thought. And he then turned it into an incredible organization has been wonderful to watch.
So Jamal, when did you decide to take the jump from WH Trading to starting this organization, and what did you have to do to kind of get from point A to point B?
Yeah, so there was a competition called the Scion Motivate Competition in 2013, I believe, where they were going to give an entrepreneur $50,000 and a marketing deal, kind of a mentorship to run a business. And so I applied for it. I did a short video. It was really just a video of me selling books downtown and talking about what I wanted to do with this program. And they flew me out to Santa Monica for the finals, and I ended up winning, and they gave me $10,000 cash and like, you know, $30,000 worth of marketing. And they connected me to a mentor. You know, when I came back to WH Trading, it was like everybody pretty much knew. They were like, man, like, you know, you're on your way, you know? And so So Will connected me with a business coach. So I talked to Will and, you know, I was like, I'm going to leave. And Will was like, okay, well, I'll still pay you for 6 months to a year or whatever it was. And I was like, thank you. And he connected me to a business coach too, that I can meet with every week. And I jumped off the porch and I just left, and everybody was really happy for me. And it was still too early for me, because I, you know, I never, it's tough, you know, starting a business. It's tough with, you know, you have to believe in yourself. I did, but you have to be persistent. You can't give up, and you need money. And I had a family, a house, and I had bills. So it was tough. And so I ended up taking a job. I used my Microsoft training to take a job at the Chicago's teachers pension fund or something like that. Yeah, I worked there. And it just so happened on the day of the interview, I ran into Will downtown, and I was so embarrassed because I was on the way to the interview and I was walking right. I saw Will. He's like, oh, what's going on? I was like, oh, well. You know, I'm trying. And Will was like, oh, we should have some lunch. He was like, we should do some lunch. And so I got the job at the pension fund as a Microsoft engineer or a Microsoft administrator. But when I got there, they were like, hold up, you're the guy that's on the corner selling those books. You're giving these speeches. We don't want you to work in IT. Like, no way possible. We need you to work in, you know, politics, you know, advocacy. And so they gave me a job to advocate for pension funds on all 700 public high schools. So I go talk to the teachers about their pension funds and make these presentations about how to invest their money. And then I go to Springfield and stuff like that too. So anyways, when I did have the with Will, I told him about where my nonprofit was at and what I was trying to do. And he said, he, you know, I asked him if he would join my board, and he did. And that's kind of how we kept the ball rolling.
So when did M3, as you call it for shorthand, officially get launched?
2016 is when we incorporated, right? In 2016 is we incorporated. That was really just finding friends that were lawyers, finding friends that were accountants, Will, and just everybody that I respected. I just like, hey, I need to get you. I didn't know how to write a grant at all. I just knew that from doing work in communities, I knew people that worked at businesses, and I was determined to put something professional together. And I had the incubator at WH Trading, the space to, you know, I knew what was professional and what wasn't. So I just, I just put it together I incorporated 2016. That's when I started.
Yeah. So where did you get some initial grants from?
Yeah. So initial grants were, our first grant we got was from, it wasn't really even a grant. It was a holiday gift from the MacArthur Foundation. And, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield gave us a community grant for maybe $10,000. I mean, we was running on fumes, you know, the first couple of years. But I would say MacArthur Foundation, just, you know, their president was really helpful in giving us a holiday grant for $45,000. And then Blue Cross Blue Shield gave us a grant. I thought I was rich when we got a grant for $50,000 from Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And then it was just selling t-shirts and hoodies. And then it was people at WH Trading just making donations. But that's how we stayed afloat. I mean, that's how we stayed afloat at the beginning.
So what were your initial outreach programs when you started the organization?
My initial outreach programs was really just, I think, bringing people to the trading firm. I think that's what that might be what I did. But I think that, okay, so initially, man, it was just taking kids from barbershops to Greektown, to the National Hellenic Museum, to Athena Greek Restaurant, and then to a marketing firm. And then when kids wanted to go downtown, I bring them to the trading firm, Giordano's. And then if they wanted to, as I started going through LinkedIn, I figured out how to, some people at WH Trading, his name was a guy named Teddy at WH Trading, taught me how to crack the code on LinkedIn per se. So if I wanted to get in touch with Google or Nike or Target, and the name of the person I wanted to contact was Jamal Cole, he showed me that their email address could only be jcole@nike.com, jamal.cole@nike.com, coleJ@nike.com. And I was like, wow, that's brilliant. And so I contacted about 100 businesses that way and told them that, hey, I have 15 teenagers from North Lawndale that deserve an opportunity to explore your business. And will you have lunch with us? Will you show us that XYZ? And so once I did that, out of 100 times, maybe 10 or 15 people responded. And, you know, since I had a degree in internet marketing, I just captured it with my camera. I captured it with my writing ability. And from there, man, that's kind of how I caught a wave in Chicago with the local papers.
So you got some good publicity and started to get some media attention behind you, huh?
Yeah, man. Like when you do what you love, it's like you organically start building relationships that'll help you be successful. And so, yeah, once I started doing it, man, and I started capturing it, I started an Instagram page. I started a Facebook page. I made banners for those pages. I just utilized my internet marketing degree and created it. You know, and then I just won that competition in LA called the Scion Motivate competition. So I asked my mentors through that competition, how do I build a better website? They helped me with that. And that's how I started. So.
And where'd you come up with the name?
Yeah, the name was just out of Cook County Jail. I wanted to start a program called Expanding Your Worldview, you know, giving kids an opportunity to see beyond the jail and see beyond their block. But all the kids in the jail kept talking about was my block is this, like my block is 21st Street, or my hood is the low end, or my hood is Bronzeville, or my hood is Woodlawn. And the way they said it was almost like, man, my hood is, they would say it so parochial. And so like, you know, I was like, man, why do y'all say my neighborhood with such passion? You don't own anything. Like, why do you say it? Why don't you say my city? And it was like, oh man, ain't no black people downtown. Oh man, ain't no black people up north. And I was like, what are you talking about? I work downtown and I'm black. And it was like, oh man, you know, that'll count. And so I was just like, man, like I knew from the way they said it, it always stuck in my mind. And so one day, as I tried to put expand your worldview on a shirt, that didn't look that good. So I put my block, my hood, and my city on the shirt with the stars. And right away I knew, like right away I was like, oh, this is could be a city bench design, or it could be something. I knew right away that it was powerful. And I put it on a shirt. And again, my business is called Role Model Movement. It's not even called My Block, My Hood, My City. But once I start wearing these shirts, that's all people's, oh, My Block, My Hood, My City. Oh, they start wearing them on Instagram. They start wearing them on Facebook at Bears rallies. I knew we were on to something. So I just made a DBA name, My Block, My Hood, My City. So
that's great. So Will, what were you doing while you were watching all of this develop? How was WH supporting this, and how was the board developing and all that?
So, you know, I was personally supporting Jamal and the organization financially, and more importantly with time, joining his board. The firm, you know, Jamal had great relationships here at WH Trading, and guys from the firm would donate financially and help Jamal. You know, Jamal would use our space when he needed it. Jamal would bring kids here to visit as part of the Explorers program. We did a lot like that. But where I probably helped the most and where I felt the closest to feeling what Jamal's feeling is watching Jamal. When I started WH Trading 1994, trading by myself, for myself, and then slowly grew the business from there. And Jamal started My Block, My Hood, My City by himself, for himself. And his path of going from being the only in person to having a staff of 20 and trying to empower the staff to kind of take ownership, but then also feeling a little jealous that the staff is taking ownership of something that you started and built by yourself. It's difficult for an owner, and I felt it, you know, 25 years ago, and I knew what Jamal was feeling as he was building out an organization. And so Jamal and I had numerous talks and email exchanges where he'd be very, very honest with how he's feeling and how it's going, and I could answer from a point of empathy, because I'd been there, I'd felt that, I knew exactly what he was feeling like. And so, you know, together we had this great relationship where he was open and honest about what he was feeling and how it was going. And I was able to, you know, kind of let him know how I felt when I was in his shoes, and kind of let him know, like, he's not wrong in thinking what he's thinking. They're real feelings. And what's the, we could talk together about the best way to move forward.
So Jamal, as you grew the organization, as Will was referring to, and you started to have staff, what was that like?
Challenging because, you know, I'm used to doing everything by myself. You know, I'm used to being a self-starter and being early, being on time. And now, you know, meeting people that, Some were like that, but some weren't. I would just say, just Will's a great leader, and just understanding more about leadership. you know, how to respond, how to come back at something 24 hours as opposed to reacting right away, how to manage money, you know what I mean, how to set up systems. It's nothing like being an activist. Like you running an organization is way different than being a community activist. You know what I mean? You have a lot of responsibility, but you also have to build an organization and lead it and set up the systems for it to run. So you have to let go. You have to, that's the big part is you have to let go of some things and trust that it's going to be okay. And that's always hard when your legacy or your life's work's on the line, you know? And so having an outlet to Will and being able to just vent and him able to be, you know, a father figure to me, like just be calm and it's going to work. Try everything that you want to do. Don't, you know, I always say, hey, Will, I got this big idea. Try it. Like it felt, if I had him in my, he always was in my corner. So I felt like, man, I always vetted everything by him. And he was like, yo, just try everything you want to do, Jamal. And so I, that was helpful. But for me, man, it was, it's a lot of scrutiny. You know, you're on the news, you're nervous as hell, excuse my language, but you're about to be on CNN and they're asking you how to stop violence in Chicago and you, they're flying you to New York City, you're going all over and then, you know, you don't know what to do. You know what I mean? You know, and you want to make sure that you are speaking professionally. And Will's like, Jamal, just be yourself. You know, you just be you. And so it was a lot, man. It was a lot. And so, that's what it was like, just very, being broke and very just grateful at the same time, but just trying to be like, you know, you want to be like Martin Luther King Jr., don't you? You want to be like Malcolm X. You want to be like John F. Kennedy. You want to, you know, make a dent in history, but it's like, you got to start on the block. And so I'm trying to accomplish these great things and trying to give these great presentations and these great speeches, but I'm just me. And so I had to learn that I wasn't like them. I was just me. And so it was just a lot of stress at the beginning. So
when did the organization really, really take off? What was the key element to it? Just, you know, expanding greatly.
I would say there's a few waves of that. So you can look at it financially. I know we made $2 million in a day one time, close to that in one day of donations from people online. I think that was like 2019 or 2020, something like that. That's when I knew that people viewed us as the on-ramp to engagement. They viewed us as like the Red Cross for the hood. Like they view us as like, okay, 40,000 people are going to make a $50 donation to my block, my city, because we view that as a credible organization. That year, Black Lives Matter made like 70 million. And I think we made, I don't know how much, we made a lot of money in a year, like over $12 million. So I was like, wow, people really entrust us with money and to do the right things with it. So that was amazing. Cause we could get more staff and we could expand our Explorers program. That was amazing. But I would say for me personally, success of the program was kind of watching, our students go to college for the first time. The kids that I knew from, like, it kind of made me want to tear up now. Like Mark Well and the twins, like they were with us for like from 2016 to 2020, you know, as freshmen, first day. And to see them graduate and we drove them to college in South Carolina. We didn't have anything when we started, but then we had a bus to drive them and we drove them 17 hours away and then stopped at Walmart to get them, you know, refrigerators and TVs and school supplies and then left. I thought that was, and now they work for us. And it is weird how it happens, but that made me feel the impact right there. So
how have you recruited people for the board to support the organization? How has that developed?
Yeah. So it's initially just started off with friends and now, you know, our name is in the city. So if we put a Indeed ad out, I feel like people will respond, but it's really just, even board members do a good job recruiting. They may recommend somebody to be on the board and then they come. It's not like it was before. It's not like a bunch of friends. It's like now we actually, it's challenging, you know, it's a business and we have very smart people that are not going to say what I want to hear or not going to, you know, they have a job and it's, I feel like it's super different than when it first started, but it's super different than when it first started, but I know it's for the right. I know how to handle it now. If I was the young person in 2013, there's no way I could have a board of directors right now because I'd be off the, I'd be all over the place. It's too emotional. But now I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to take a chill pill like Will taught me. And I know that they want the best for the organization, but it's, man, we have some MBAs on the board. People that are like way beyond smarter than me. It's not even close, but it's amazing. So.
What have been some of the besides the Explorer program, what have been some of the other big types of outreach or events that have been most, you know, effective or meaningful?
Yeah, so I think of the Holiday Lights program. You know, we decorate 500 homes on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive for free every year, like 500 homes. We hang ribbons, bows, wreaths. We put holiday trees all up and down King Drive. And we get volunteers to come out and help, like 1,000 volunteers come out and help hang these lights on people's homes. They get to meet new people. They get to engage in activity together. And also all you see now on King Drive is, you know, police car lights and helicopter lights. But when you put holiday lights up there, it kind of interrupts trauma and inspires hope in the youth. That's one of our favorite initiatives. It's really simple. People love to do it. People donate lights, they donate gifts, and it makes kids feel special. So I love that one. Also, I love our youth-led tours because it provides a summer job to our students. So our youth, they lead walking tours, three-hour walking tours up North Lawndale in the summer. And corporations come, they buy tickets and they show up on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And the youth, it gives them leadership skills to talk about, hey, here's the artful intersection of my neighborhood. Here's the community roots of my neighborhood. Here's the hidden gym restaurants of my neighborhood. Here's the only grocery store in my neighborhood. Here's my school. And here's where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. lived when he lived in Chicago. And they have the headsets and it's like a walking tour, but it gives them presentation skills. I think I'm very proud of that program. And yeah, I guess the next one I'll talk about is something that's fresh that we're doing right now is, you know, it's called Downtown Day. And it kind of starts from what me and you were talking about earlier about looking out that jail window and seeing downtown, but no kids had ever been. So we want to eliminate that phrase, I've never been downtown. So on July 8th, we're having something called Downtown Day, where we're inviting over 1,000 youth. There's about 1,200 kids signed up right now from different organizations too. And we're giving them $50 Visa cards or Discover cards to explore downtown and visit cultural institutions that we've selected, like the, you know, the Hancock Center, the 360, the Sears Tower, or Willis Tower. They're gonna be at the Cranes Communication Building, the Lyric Opera, the Shedd Aquarium, Field Museum. I mean, we're working with the Magnificent Mile Association, and we're working with the Chicago Loop Alliance to, you know, we're all connected to identify businesses on July 8th. And so, you know, I'm very excited about that because, you know, you've seen all the recent headlines of kids, you know, rioting downtown. But this is an alternative to that, giving them something to do downtown and we're going to have chaperones too, obviously. But that's called Downtown Day. So as you can see, we just do simple things and we're able to see right away if they're going to work or not. So,
Will, what has been the hardest thing that the board has had to deal with?
Well, developing a board that kind of fills all the functions that the organization needs. It's a unique board in that most boards, like the primary function of the board member is to help the organization raise money. And Jamal is such a prolific fundraiser and has done such a great job of raising money that, you know, it pales in the board's contribution pale into comparison to what Jamal can do by himself. The board might make some introductions, but Jamal's kind of, you know, he comes in and he's the reason why people give money. And so the board needs to support Jamal in all the other ways of being, you know, the fiduciaries of those donations. And so, you know, hiring a board member that was an accountant so he could, a professional accountant, so he could join the finance committee and help make sure that, you know, all the money is being spent within the rules of the IRS and we're keeping track of it the right way and we're getting an audit and doing all those things. And then we also needed an attorney. Jamal had a great attorney write the 501c3 documents and get all that approved, but he was busy and wasn't able to come to the board meetings. And so he's still on the board, but we needed another attorney that could come that could just lend a professional attorney's perspective to different initiatives that Jamal might want to do or different things that is going on the board. And so we had to build that out. And then the accountant that was on the board, when Jamal grew big enough that we needed a CFO, the accountant stepped down from the board and became the CFO, which was great. He knew the organization. He knew Jamal. He fit seamlessly into that role. But then we needed another accountant to join the board. So we had to go out and, you know, recruit somebody with that background to then join the finance committee and work with the CFO. You know, so the challenges of the board have been how to build out the support that Jamal needs for a board that is unique in that it's, you know, usually you say you need either wealth, between wealth, wisdom, and work, you need board members to be two of the three. And in Jamal's case, you need more the wisdom and the work, and less of the wealth comes from the board.
What are some of the organizations that have partnered with M3, either in the trading community or in the business community or in the, you know, not-for-profit community?
Yeah, this it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, one of our initiatives right now, we're working with the Chicago Bulls on, Chicago Sky, Chicago Park District, Chicago Loop Alliance, Magnificent Mile Association, Becoming a Man, Champs Mentoring, Residents Association of Greater Inglewood, you know, North Lawndale Christian Leadership, Washington Park Residents Advocacy Council. Like we have a lot of partners, because it takes a village, really. It really does. You can't really just come into a community and do anything without listening and learning from the people that have been doing it for a while. So that's community organizing for us. So yeah, man, I think that we do explorations or field trips really well, but we don't do like mentoring in college. So if there's an organization that we know that does that, we're happy to like work together on, you know, providing wraparound services for youth and parents. We don't do parent engagement, but some organizations do. So most kids in Chicago are already part of 5 or 6, 7 different organizations, right? And so we work together, and you know, just have to put the ego aside, just work together on that. So, and we've even worked with city government, right? We've worked with state government, we've worked with city government before, and we're willing to work with more people. So
is this an organization that can grow beyond Chicago?
I think so, for sure. You know, I envision this being in South Africa, New York City, Atlanta, you know, Philadelphia. But, you know, my visions are, there's a lot of work to do in Chicago, you know what I mean? And I feel like we have to expand with integrity. And I think that it's hard to do in Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, it is, like, you know how hard it is to do this work in Chicago. And like, could you imagine, like, it's 10 years in Chicago, like it's going to take that kind of time in another city. And so it's almost arrogant to believe that you can, like, I believe the recipe works. Like, exposure is key and traveling is transformative. And if you show kids better, they do better. But you have to build all the connections, to build a board, to build local media connections, to actually have events, to be on the ground, to meet people. Oh, I've seen you before. That is something that I'm looking forward to seeing happen. But man, honestly, God, like, we have 36 schools on a waiting list in Chicago, right? We have a lot of work to do. So yes, I want to see it happen in different cities, and I want this My Block, My Hood, My City shirt to be worn in the Olympics. But yeah, I'm going to just like, just remain grateful for the people that give in Chicago and try to, oh, I know what I want to say. I want to say this. It used to be about expansion and numbers for me. Now I kind of want to decrease my numbers. So I say that to say, because I've lost too many kids to gun violence, and I don't think it's fair to have a program where there's 500 kids involved and they're getting a lukewarm experience. I'd rather have 50 kids or 100 kids that had great aspirations. We knew who their parents were, great engagement, and we saw them go out to college, because that's actually being real. You know what I mean? So I in this part of my life, and it's not, I haven't gotten here easily, right? People have been telling me, like, don't tell me that. I want to expand to Africa, right? But it's after telling me so many times, I'm learning that, man, like, if it's really about the youth, then you have to walk with those youth by the hand and see it through. So yeah, we're gonna decrease numbers, but improve our impact. And I think that's what it's about. So
Any final thoughts at all, Will?
Jamal, I'd love you to just touch a minute on the block clubs and what you've done between like changing the signs that just changes the narrative and bringing the communities together. Can you just explain that quickly?
I grew up in Chatham, so south side of Chicago. There's a lot of block clubs, which are small social groups that organize monthly to improve the quality of life in their block. And when you go through the south side and west side now, you see a lot of block club signs that say no littering, no loitering, no looting, no, 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 no. And so I approached over 100 block clubs to fix their signs or upgrade their signs to saying positive things that affirm the community. Like, yes, we work together. Yes, so we settle differences amongst each other. Yes, we do gardens together. And so what started is just changing block club signs from saying no to yes has evolved to, you know, having this whole block club coalition now where they meet monthly. All these 71 block clubs meet once per month with us, and we talk about ways to get that drug house off your block, or ways to, you know, get a new speed bump if you need it, or ways to get, how many signatures do you need for a stop sign, or how do we get the new LED lights, or want the old fluorescent lights, how do we get our alley clean? So we talk about this block wisdom together. And, you know, we mobilize, like we shovel snow with each other. We mow lawns together. So we're really is democracy starts from the block with these block club captains. We give them the tools they need to be organizers on their own. And so that's our block club captain program. We're really proud of it. And we probably do about 20 new signs every year and bring on 20 new block clubs a year. That's that. But I also want to say just a huge thank you to Will, man, because, and you know, I could thank you for the rest of my life, but honest to God, like, I feel like I'm living a dream, man. I feel like I'm living a dream, like having you as a mentor, a father figure to be able to tell the truth to and be vulnerable is, I mean, we did this together, man. Like, honestly, like for real. And so this whole, it's crazy. It's crazy how we met. That's really a really true story about me coming there and helping with the boxes and me meeting Colin that day. And then you've always been who you said you were, and you always trusted me, which was so weird for me. I guess that's what's weird to me is like when I meet you and you're like, oh, you know, here's the keys to my house. I need you to do this. Or, oh, I'm going to send you to Philadelphia to do this. Or, oh yeah, I'll write you another check, like to go to Microsoft class. Or, oh yeah, I'll give you the money to pay for your books if you just show me how. Just what's the plan for your books? Who's going to print them? Who's going to do this? How are you going to get the graphics? Like every time I come to you with the idea or come to you, you've always supported me, not always financially, but definitely giving me time. And I just, I'm looking forward to seeing where we take it, man. I really am. So just thank you, Will. I appreciate you. So.
Yeah. Hey, it's great. I can't say enough about what joy I get out of supporting you. You are amazing. You've always been amazing. And it warms my heart to be able to support you and to watch what you do and how well you do it and how you are growing this organization. You're a true inspiration.
Thank you, Will. Thank you. I appreciate you. And John, thank you for taking the time too, man. I appreciate it.
All right.